Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, of all forms of discrimination and inequalities, injustice in health is the most shocking and inhumane. But how do we close these gaps and ensure all Americans have the support they need to live healthy lives? Our guests have some important ideas they're already making strides on.
We know that the primary drivers of health are really in communities. So, and not only that, but the communities also have the resources and knowledge and resilience and know-how that will create the conditions for wellness.
The Community Health Acceleration Partnership says that it's rethinking philanthropy to support community-driven care. We're going to hear from one of its leaders and from the organizer of an innovative program called Girl Trek that has a lot of Black women moving in the right direction.
The mindfulness it requires to open your front door every day as a discipline and walk in the direction of your healthiest, most fulfilled life. So for us, it is a real balance between joy and justice. And it has to be, because my God, we have to change the face of public health from one that is just treatment to one that is real prevention.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Well, we welcome our two guests to Conversations on Healthcare. Morgan Dixon is the co-founder and CEO of Girl Trek, and we're going to give her a chance to explain it in just a minute. But let's start with Raquel Maison Jeffers, the co-director of Community Health Acceleration Partnership, or CHAP. Raquel, you're joining us from New Jersey. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And I know that's where CHAP is headquartered. Your aim is to, quote, reconnect health by shifting care from a strictly medical approach to one that harnesses the resilience of communities. Of course, we're big advocates in the community health center world of and implementers of this community health approach. But where are you seeing the need for more of it?
Well, I think we see, first of all, that our origins at CHAP really came from work that was global. We started to work in sub-Saharan Africa about 10 years ago, and we learned that really focusing on Millennium Development Goals to have the number of people living in extreme poverty. But while we were doing that work, we really recognized that it became very clear that many of the poor health outcomes that we were seeing in Africa were also occurring in the U.S. So we really kind of switched our direction. So for example, there are neighborhoods in Newark, New Jersey, that have worse maternal health outcomes than Ghana, Namibia, and Haiti. Mm. So really, in particular, we've been very focused on maternal health in particular, but in general, we know that the power of community health and community health workers really is transferable. Not in a traditional Western understanding of we have ideas in the global North that can be translated into the global South, but that there are ways that community health has been activated in the global South that are applicable in the U.S. And so we've really been thinking about how do we bring those lessons here to the U.S. We've been focusing a lot on the maternal health epidemic in the U.S. in particular, but really recognizing that the resources and resilience that exists in communities are really worth investing in, that the majority of our investment in healthcare in this country has really been in the medical system and healthcare systems, but that we know that the primary drivers of health are really in communities. So, and not only that, but the communities also have the resources and knowledge and resilience and know-how that will create the conditions for wellness. And I think that's really what Girl Trek embodies, this idea that community members themselves can hold the secret to their own health.
And I really like this notion that best practices can be found around the globe and crosswalked over here. So there are teachable moments that we have, but we're also learning. It sounds like you've really done a great job in extracting some best practices from around the globe.
Yeah, I mean, before coming to work at CHAP, I worked in state government, and one of my roles was as the director for mental health and addictions for the state. And I often struggled with these uncomfortable facts that most of the time, individuals who got into care in the system got there after like major catastrophic life events happened. So they were arrested, or their kids were removed, and they were unemployed or on welfare, or they were homeless. So what we're trying to do now is really think about a public health approach that is going upstream, that is more preventative, and really trying to identify disease and intervene and create conditions for wellness before the illnesses cascade, and that the severity of illness is both has bigger consequences for families and individuals, but also greater cost for our entire healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. Well, Raquel, I noted that the Rockefeller Foundation and her philanthropy was an important advisor for CHAP. And interestingly, as you may know, Rockefeller was actually the funders for the very first excursion of the founder of the community health movement in the United States, Dr. Jack Iger, to go to South Africa and study the model there. So there's a synergy among all of these different people, organizations, and countries. But I'm very curious, when you made the transition from the work, or expanded the work in sub-Saharan Africa to focus on community health in the United States, what were the lessons that you learned from the experience in Africa relative to community health workers in particular about informal versus formal structures? And, you know, in America, people say we like to turn everything into a formal academic or certification program, but in other countries, much more staying at the grassroots level. Was it tied to public health departments or indigenous organizations? Just share a little bit with us about what you saw, about how it was structured in Africa to what you've replicated here in the U.S.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that we most important lessons that we've tried to we're bringing to the U.S. is that many, in particular, the individuals who are trying hardest to serve, who are the hardest to serve, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, we are there's a tremendous mistrust mm-hmm. of the healthcare system, and community health workers, in particular, really carry that message of trust by being members of the community with lived experience who can speak to the actual circumstances and lives and engender trust and really build a bridge. There are many people who will never enter or are not feeling ready to enter any kind of formalized system of care. That's probably particularly more so true of the mental health system in particular. Maybe because of stigma, maybe because of historic institutional racism, but those structures, they're like big chasms. So that we have really recognized that there's a workforce at the community level of people with lived experience and who also bring the trust of community members with them that can be trained and connected to communities so that they can carry messages of health and well-being, but also help individuals navigate health systems. I think we saw this in COVID, that the greatest messengers around some of the preventative messages for COVID were really community members themselves. So the first thing I think we learned is that we have to really mobilize communities and build trust in order to engage people in health and wellness. The second thing I think we learned is that the role of philanthropy is not to replace or disrupt government. It's really to work alongside government and to really understand that the role of philanthropy is almost like a tugboat and working with the mothership of government to help it to help bring that ship to shore, because often government funds are not very agile. It's hard for them to make investments in small community-based organizations. It's hard for them to change their own systems. But philanthropic dollars can be wisely used to really help that ship turn its course and make more and more meaningful and more trusted connections with community members. So I think those are two of the major lessons. And that really drives a lot of our work in the US, that it should always be locally driven and network supported. So we can continue to inform that very local movement, but really empower it with knowledge from across the country and across the world, really.
It's interesting how CHAP tailors its resources and activities to accomplish what you call the integration of the community health workforce into an ecosystem of care. And one way this is occurring is through its support of Girl Trek. So Morgan Dixon, you helped lead Girl Trek, which we understand is powering a mass movement for health justice. There are many parts to your program, but tell us about this and how did it start?
Girl Trek started with two friends, and now we are over a million Black women who walk, talk, and solve problems together in their communities. The mission is to increase the life expectancy of Black women by 10 years in 10 years. And so it started about a decade ago, and we have movement builders and organizers all over the country, all over the United States, and all over the world in about 40 countries.
Well, speaking of many countries, Morgan, we find you in Ghana today. We're so appreciative of you coming. And, you know, you're encouraging Black women and girls to use walking as the first practical step to leading to healthier, more fulfilled lives. And there are other efforts, including Prayer Trek, with nearly 3,000 churches taking part, and Black History Boot Camp. I think our listeners would be interested in all of this. Can you share more with us?
All right. So the 18th U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Regina Benjamin, is on our board of directors, and she says that if she could encapsulate walking into a pill, that it would be a miracle drug, and she'd prescribe it to all the patients in America. Walking is such a powerful intervention for everything from chronic disease to also, if you walk in groups, to loneliness, right? At Girl Trek, we also walk collectively to increase life expectancy, right? So all of this to say, we do this, we encourage women to walk by meeting them where they are. Many Black women are in churches, so we do something every year called a prayer trek, where for 9 days, we walk according to a scripture called the Nine Fruit of the Spirit. So that's one of our programs. We have another program called Black History Boot Camp, where you log on, you put your earbuds in, you take a walk, and in 30 minutes, we teach you something in Black history as you are walking. And that was really powerful for women during the pandemic, because lots of women were walking by themselves, and it was helpful to be on the line live with you know, thousands of women, sometimes 100,000 women, all walking together, learning together, oftentimes crying together, laughing together. It felt like a really beautiful community that we created.
Wow. Well, Morgan, you know, we talk about health disparities and disparities in health care often on this program, but we always think it's important to ensure we have the details and that we share them. Black women are more likely than other racial and ethnic groups to die from cardiovascular disease, including hypertension and stroke, from lupus, from multiple different cancers, and twice as likely as white women to develop diabetes over the age of 55. And of course, the maternal morbidity and mortality crisis is very much on the minds of everybody when it comes to Black women. The statistics are overwhelming, but I'm really curious, how are you informing, educating Black women about these facts without leaving them with a sense of despair or helplessness? And I would imagine the lived experience makes it something that people are already quite aware of and already feeling overwhelmed by. So tell us about that. How are you addressing that in the conversations on your treks?
Oh, I love that question. Thank you for asking. Yeah, we're facing a health crisis, and the health crisis can be completely overwhelming. So Black women are dying a decade earlier than their sisters of other races from preventable diseases. And so we could talk about statistics around isolation, around inactivity, around injustice, which we call the three deadly eyes. We could talk about those things, and we do, because public health education is really important to Girl Trek members. But more than that, we want to talk about solutions. And for us, walking is such like a cross-cutting solution to those three eyes of inactivity, isolation, and injustice, that we really talk about the agency of putting one foot in front of the other, the mindfulness it requires to open your front door every day as a discipline and walk in the direction of your healthiest, most fulfilled life. So for us, it is a real balance between joy and justice. And it has to be, because my God, we have to change the face of public health from one that is just treatment to one that is real prevention. So at Girl Trek, we try and strike a really beautiful balance there.
Well, that's so important, and equally important is really your goal in terms of how you're going to address this disparity that both you and Margaret were talking about in terms of Black women dying much earlier than white women, and then you have a program to increase life expectancy for women, Black women, by 10 years in 10 years. Tell us about how that program came about and how far along are you on that track?
I appreciate that question. So when we first started, we set a mission to inspire 1 million Black women to walk in their neighborhoods for better health, to inspire our daughters to reclaim the streets of our neighborhoods. And we achieved that mission in 2020. And so everyone wanted to know what happens when you get 1 million Black women to walk together. Well, we asked 1 million Black women, what next? What do we do next? And the prevailing answer was, we want to live. We want to live long. We want to live well. We want to live our most fulfilled lives. You know, it is a part of the American dream, this kind of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so one of the things we thought is, okay, well, what is the truest measure of justice when it comes to living? And it really is life expectancy. So we looked at the statistics and we looked at our sisters who were Asian American, our sisters who were white, our sisters who were of all races, Native American, Latino, and we fared worse than most women in the country. And one of the things we thought is, if we could just live that last decade, what power could we unleash to the world? And like our lives, like, that is a really important thing for us to be able to live our longest, healthiest lives. So we set a mission about a year ago to increase the life expectancy of Black women in America by 10 years in 10 years. So we're currently living to be about 78 years old. And our goal is that in 10 years, by 2035, we'll be living to be 88 years old. My God, that is a hard goal. It is much harder than getting 1 million Black women to walk in their neighborhood. What it's going to require is a roundtable of really powerful partners, everyone from public health systems to influencers to new economies that really support this population health goal. So we're prepared to build a big tent of people and invite people in who care that Black women get to live as long as everyone else.
Tell me what you've learned from other parts of the globe in terms of how they're addressing these issues, and how have you crosswalked some of those back to here, to the United States?
Yeah, we have been very lucky to be a part of many global fellowships like Echoing Green, like the Audacious Ideas that come with TED on the global stage, like Ashoka and Aspen Institute. These are institutions and fellowships that bring the top social innovators of the world together. And we have learned so much that what any solution needs to be affordable, accessible, and it needs to be people powered. And so one of the things that we're not that interested in is this kind of top-down systems change. If we are going to truly change behavior and real narratives of what it means to be healthy and what it means to want to live, we have to engage a critical mass of people. So for example, in America, nearly 10% of all Black women in America are members of Girl Trek. That's what we need in order to change population health. Mm-hmm. So as we start to expand beyond the borders, we're now in 40 countries. The question is, what is the single most powerful thing we can do and promote to increase longevity? How do we use that victory in order to attract the kind of resources and partnerships that are required for systems level change? Right. So by, you know, where it, we are democratizing public health by creating demand for systems level change. And then we've just been inspired around the world by people like Wangari Maathai in Kenya, who inspired women to plant trees, right? And they planted 50 million trees and brought Kenya back from the brink of environmental devastation. So the question for us when we started is like, what is our tree? What is our unit of change? And for us, it is asking to walk to improve her health, and then to come back and get her neighbors. And then as they walk and talk, they then begin to solve problems together that are barriers to health in their communities.
Well, these are audacious goals, as they should be. And every good audacious goal needs some grounding strategy to make them happen. I'd like to Raquel, ask you about this. I understand that you really see the community health workers and the other community workers being able to achieve certification for their services to be reimbursed, for them to be paid as part of this solution. Tell me about this. What type of certification are you looking for? And does, in fact, the fact that services are reimbursed and people are paid help address some of the fundamental health disparities, of which income inequality is certainly one?
Margaret, I'm so glad you asked this question, because this is really at the heart of how Morgan and CHAP came together to partner. Girl Trek was asking this question. They have an entire volunteer movement up until this point, and they've begun to ask this question: what about if we could, there are neighborhood captains who lead walks, and what about if some of them, not all of them, wanted to do more and wanted to get paid for their role? So we started to put our heads together to think maybe Girl Trekkers could be community health workers and get certified and potentially paid through that funding stream. One of the things that we've learned as funders is that we really try to take on trust-based philanthropy, where we really listen and we're willing to pivot when we're wrong. So we're on a journey with our partners, and we're not trying to kind of fit a square peg in a round hole no matter what. So what happened, what we began to understand, is that community health workers, as they're understood and reimbursed and certified in the U.S., are not exactly what Girl Trekkers are doing. And I love this term. Girl Trek is really understanding them, their role as community health activists, right? They're really, the fact that they're walking and talking is a really important part of the model. So we have been working together to identify what are the funding streams and the right certifications, or do we need to invent a new certification, so that we are really celebrating the strengths and resilience and motion that Girl Trek has really brought to the table here as a solution, rather than asking Girl Trek and their movement to fit into the existing constructs of our healthcare system. So that's really been the focus of our work together. And we have learned a lot at CHAP about what it means to be really committed to the full picture of the goals and achievements that Girl Trek is trying to reach, and to allow ourselves to be, to accompany them and be allies with them in the truest sense of the word. So I would love to ask Morgan to also chime in about the issue of certification, because I know that you've also been really thinking about how you're training Girl Trekkers to go to the next level.
Yes. So we learned a story just recently about how paramedicine started in America. And I encourage listeners, there's an episode of Black History Bootcamp called Freedom House. If you type in Black History Bootcamp Freedom House, you can listen to the story. But essentially, you had 20-something African-American men in Pittsburgh who became trained in something new called paramedicine. It was never invented before. It was new. So they got taught defensive driving, intubation, IVs, delivering babies, defensive driving. Did I say that? And CPR, which is this newfangled thing where you pump on people's chests and save grandma, right? So this was all a very scary thing a long time ago. But fast forward to now, there are paramedics all over America because their pilot worked. They were certified in something that was really valuable in their communities. So one of the things we like to think about is like, where are the gaps in public health and how can we provide door-to-door care? And what kinds of certification are required for that door-to-door care so that we can meet women at their points of need, but also we can provide workforce and workforce development for women who are really, really battling the health epidemic of poverty, right? And so how can we do both at the same time and have this double bottom line? So for Girl Trek, community health activists are really threefold, not even double. Meet our neighbors at their point of need with really specific care, employ women to go door to door and deliver said care, and then equip women to be advocates in their community for systems change. And we believe that is a different model that hasn't been tried before, and we're excited to do it.
Morgan, I want to ask you about Ozempic, and I think there's probably no conversation in America that either AI or Ozempic is mentioned, and obviously it's a new pharmaceutical treatment that's really taken off, and that weight loss injections, and they come under many names, but Ozempic's one of them. Millions of people have received prescriptions so far in the U.S., and reports are patients are indeed losing weight. But I think the more important question are we still seeing disparities here? And are diverse populations getting access they need to these treatments? Or do you believe that really it may be an adjunct to a fundamental let's start walking first campaign and then look at other perhaps pharmaceutical interventions?
Yeah, well, I am no researcher. And in fact, I was on the phone with the leading researcher on obesity today, one of them out of Duke University, Dr. Gary Bennett, who's also on our board, and he has lots to say about this. So I won't pretend to be Dr. Bennett. But what I will, there are a couple of things. One, obesity is not the single cause of death for Black women, right? So it is, we need to also have interventions and solutions that ameliorate all of the other causal factors of early death, including things like stress, right? Or loneliness, which is deadlier than cigarette smoking. So in many parts of the world, we were having a global conversation before, women have their BMIs are indicate that they are heavy, but they are still not overweight or over a healthy weight, but they're still not dying from the preventable diseases that we are. And so weight loss in and of itself is not going to save all of our lives. And one of the things for us to consider is access to these drugs. And I want to make sure that in the interim, while we can get pharmaceuticals affordable enough to be available and to the masses of people, that we have interventions that are just for everyone. And walking is incredibly powerful. It is healthy from a mental health perspective and a physical health perspective and a community health perspective. And we believe that it's the best intervention.
Well, Morgan, I have one question I really want to ask you. I'm curious, just so we don't make the men feel left behind. Are there similar efforts for guys? Do you see within your neighborhood groups people being inclusive of other genders, or do they need a different approach? Maybe walking's not the answer for everybody.
Oh, I love this question. Our number one core value in Girl Trek is one called radical welcome. Welcome every single person listening to take a walk with us. And that shows up with generations of people walking, strollers, grandmothers, mothers. But it also shows up with families. It shows up with neighbors, people of all races and colors. We support and serve and love Black women just because we know that if we can solve for those who are struggling most in our society, that we really can inspire like widespread change. And Black women really are suffering disproportionately. But it doesn't mean we don't welcome radically every single person in our lives. And then the other half of your question is, I was at a think tank one time. I think it was with New Profit or some incredible organization. And they asked who were the exemplar organizations that the civil rights movement in terms of grassroots organizing and pick up basketball in terms of scalable public health interventions. And people thought I was joking, and I definitely was not joking. The accessibility of and the kind of widespread nature of pickup basketball, where you can go to any community across America on a Saturday morning and all you need is a basketball and sneakers and you can have a pickup game, is how ubiquitous we want Girl Trek walking crews to be across the country. And so I think our men have something, you know, have something we could learn from, quite frankly. And they're also invited to our walks.
Perfect. Oh, that is so wonderful. We want to thank both of you for joining us for this great conversation from New Jersey to Ghana. We had a great conversation about the work that both of you are doing. Thanks to our audience for being here. Be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube and find us on Facebook and X with our account name, CHC Radio. As always, you can go online to chcradio.com to sign up for email updates. You can also share your thoughts and comments about this program. Thank you both for your inspirational work and for taking time to talk with us on Conversations on Healthcare.
This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.